Welcome to the Discover Strength podcast. This week, we'll be talking about the Boston Marathon, strength training for marathon runners, and we'll be joined by two incredible guests, Dr. Chris Lundstrom, head coach of Minnesota Distance Elite, and Dakota Lindworm of Minnesota Distance Elite, and member of the U.S. Olympic team that will go to Paris this summer. We'll start off by speaking with Coach Lundstrom about the Boston Marathon, which, as we record this, is just over a week away. Then we'll transition into a discussion with Dakota Lindworm about her experiences running Boston. Finally, we'll wrap with addressing some of the strength training myths and misconceptions as they apply to long distance runners. So let's kick off with Coach Lundstrom. Coach Lundstrom serves as the head coach for Minnesota Distance Elite. He grew up in Northfield, Minnesota, ran cross country and track at Stanford University, and then competed as a professional marathoner for Minnesota Distance Elite. He competed in multiple U.S. Olympic marathon trials, represented the U.S. in the Pan Am Games, and has a marathon PR of 2 hours and 17 minutes. Coach Lundstrom also completed a PhD at the University of Minnesota, where he currently teaches in the Department of Kinesiology. Lundstrom is largely considered the preeminent thought leader on marathon training and racing. I should mention, I think Coach Lundstrom has been through about 500 Discover Strength workouts over the last two decades. Coach Lundstrom, thanks for joining us today.
Thank you so much for having me. It's great to be here. Good to see you, Luke.
Before we dive into all things Boston, tell us about Minnesota Distance Elite. What is Minnesota Distance Elite?
Minnesota Distance Elite is a post-collegiate elite training group that was started in 2001, formerly known as Team USA Minnesota, with the goal of developing, U.S. runners who can compete at the international level. So we currently have 15 athletes, men and women, 800 meters up to the marathon. So it's quite a varied group, but all of them are, coming out of college looking to pursue their dreams and compete at the highest level. Hopefully, ultimately representing the U.S. one day. That's the dream.
Fantastic. Now, before we get into the nuances of the Boston Marathon course, talk us through briefly your coaching philosophy. So what are the key components to preparation for any marathoner?
Yeah, so you want a little more training philosophy? Is that the idea? I like to differentiate. Coaching philosophy is largely, relationship, which is a whole different conversation. But in terms of the training, it's really specificity based on the event that people are preparing for. Not all distance runners should train the same. They have different strengths and areas they need to improve upon and different things that they're getting ready for. And certainly this is where Boston gets very interesting because it is a unique course and with the topography there, the unknown weather, all of that. I think the foundation for distance runners, if we can speak generally, even middle distance runners, it is largely an aerobic sport. So, just continuing to build that aerobic base through long runs, threshold runs, and then, threshold intervals. And then obviously the higher intensity work needs to mirror the demands of the event that you're going to get ready for. So looks very different for an 800 meter runner versus a 10K runner, half marathoner, marathoner, but doing a good amount of volume at the, goal race pace and effort is what you need to be doing as you get closer and closer to the event. But over time, year after year, just building that aerobic base makes such a big difference for athletes in all those events.
Do you think there's one difference in your approach relative to the other coaches that we read about and learn about? Is your approach to training, is there a few themes that tend to stray from what the other coaches are advising?
I don't think that there's major differences. I think it's really more in the implementation, I would say. I think there's a tendency to want to do more and more and more. And you experience this in the strength training world, I'm sure, of shouldn't I be training 5 days a week or 6 days a week? And really, if anything, I would say we do fewer hard workouts and fewer really hard workouts. We do them, but when we want it, when we do them, we want to be really ready for them and prepared, and then recover. You know, that recovery period is so critical. So it's, I would say, less dense training, would be a way I would phrase it, of not trying to cram more and more stuff into a period of time where you're not ready, you're not recovered enough to absorb more training yet. So that would be one differentiating factor. I guess another thing particular to the marathon would be more long, continuous type of workouts. You know, you don't get a rest in the marathon. So, I mean, I still use interval training, of course, and it's valuable. But I would say, you know, some coaches, well, if you're training for a 10K, you're going to do 6 by a mile. If you're training for a marathon, let's do 12 or 15 or something. I would rather do a continuous effort where you're alternating some paces, hitting a lot of time at marathon pace versus doing just tons and tons of intervals.
Yeah, fantastic. Now, I should mention this. Coach Lundstrom clearly has experience as an elite runner himself, and he is coaching elite runners, but he's also taught the marathon training class at the University of Minnesota, which is largely first-time marathoners. And he's taught that for the better part of a decade. So he has experience working with marathon runners of all different kinds. So before we get into Boston, let me just ask this. Every runner is different, but what do you think the most fundamental training error that marathoners tend to make? So what tweak or addition to the buildup would benefit the average marathon runner the most?
Ooh. I think that the average marathoner, I would say they probably don't do enough intensity. Everything is kind of in the middle. So they might run 5 days a week and everything is kind of the same pace, probably a little too hard for it to be easy, not high enough intensity to really, like, you know, bump up their VO2 max or their lactate threshold, and they're a little tired all the time. So I would say, you know, finding those days where you're going to, you know, really go hard and long, and then taking the other days relatively easy. So that would be a big one that I see for sure. And I think a lot of people who, you know, don't have coaching, for example, they don't really know how to structure an interval workout, and so they're not touching those higher intensity zones. They're not strength training. They're not doing the little things that can help keep them healthy.
Yeah, fantastic. Okay, let's talk about Boston Marathon. As we get into it, just walk us through your experience either running and coaching athletes at the Boston Marathon.
I ran it, actually ran 3 years in a row and was 16th, 17th, and 18th, not in that order of years, but prize money at that time went to 15 deep. So it was, you know, a great accomplishment, but also slightly disappointing each time. But very different experiences. The first year was a hot year. It was the last year that they had a noon start. So I got sunburned. One year, the third year I ran, there was a nor'easter. They thought about canceling the race because it was windy and, you know, 38 degrees and raining. Pretty similar to, you know, the year that Des won. So, you know, hard to know what to expect. I would say I always left feeling like, ah, we almost got it that time. But it always leaves you feeling like there's a little bit more that you can figure out. So I love the challenge of it that way. And I've coached a number of athletes who've run Boston over the years as well. So, and I do think, you know, despite all the cautions that we give people and things, it is something, you know, that it pays to have some experience out on the course, and to, you know, run it multiple times is really amazing if you have a chance to do it.
So let's talk about course strategy. I think this is a marathon that our traditional approach is we should try to negative split the marathon. We should run the first half just a bit slower than we run the second half. And if it's not a negative split, an even split would be great. The Boston Marathon presents interesting challenges because the first 6 miles are so downhill. So in the Boston Marathon, do you advise a negative split approach? Or would you focus more on effort and say, hey, if those 6 miles, the first 6 miles of downhill, are a little bit quicker, that's okay. What's your approach to how do we pace the first half and second half of this marathon?
Yeah, the first 6 miles largely downhill, like you said. The first 3 miles are quite steep downhill, even at points. So I think it's okay to be a little bit fast there. I think you want to be as smooth and relaxed as possible. So think about it as definitely even effort. It is going to be a little bit faster, but think about maybe 10 to 15 seconds per mile faster. Not going at the same effort and really loping down the hill. I would say the strategy that I think is most successful is trying to find the most efficient, smooth stride you can down that hill. So, meaning you're not braking, you're not going, oh, I'm going too fast, I need to hit the brakes. But also, you're not like I said, overstriding or really like putting massive amounts of time in the bank, as they say. So, but yeah, it is difficult to even split it for sure.
So now, as we approach the Newton Hills, so we're getting into 16 miles through 21 miles, a series of hills that culminate with Heartbreak Hill. What are the common factors for a runner that's able to run the Newton Hills well? If we want to be in a good place through mile 15 and getting into the Newton Hills, how do we have to treat those first 15 miles?
Yeah, I think you want to be going into the second half, obviously, of any marathon, feeling like it's kind of just getting underway. I think you need to know you have that expectation that you've got these hills coming up. I think everybody hears about Heartbreak Hill, which is a big hill at 21 miles. But really, the only reason that is such a big deal is because there's three more before it. Starting at 16 miles, as you said, there's, I think, the longest hill on the course, which is a gradual one. But if you're not prepared for that, it can kind of take you by surprise. So I think really being even effort up the hills, knowing that, there are multiple hills. One thing I did in preparation was, I had to do a lot of these long runs on the treadmill, and I would just set it at, 5% for a half mile later in my long runs, and then take a half mile flat or downhill, hit another half mile uphill, flat. And so having that repeating cycle and being used to, yeah, this is going to get a little uncomfortable, but I'm going to find a rhythm up this hill, find the right rhythm up the hill. No, it is going to be a little bit harder, of course. Yeah, it's going to be hard running uphill. But you don't want to be like going to the well at 16 miles to get up the hill. You've got, a few miles of uphills to tackle. But then, smooth, even effort up the hill. And then, you do have some downhills mixed in there. So you can recover a little bit and gather yourself. So I think that's the time where you really want to be checking in on your posture, making sure you're keeping good running form, your upper body is staying loose and relaxed. You're not wasting energy where you shouldn't be. And then also mentally, I think just knowing, okay, once I get to 21, I have a nice long downhill after that. So that would be another thing to kind of keep in mind.
Yeah, that's very valuable. Coach Lundstrom, what are the most common tactical errors that even experienced marathoners make on the Boston course?
Sure. The biggest one surely is just going out way too fast. It's very easy to get overexcited. It's the Boston Marathon, and then you've got that massive downhill. So, 30, 40 seconds per mile faster than your goal pace is going to probably put you in trouble later on. But I guess, that's one everybody talks about. Another one I would say is that, when you hit the Newton Hills, thinking that the race is over because you start to struggle at that point. it is going to be hard. Everybody's going to be suffering at that point. And so you get to that 21-mile mark, you've got a nice long downhill. You can recover if you can just get the wheels spinning again. The year I ran my best there, I ran some really fast miles in the last 5 miles. And that was the difference between a great race and a so-so race. So I think just mentally knowing, yeah, this is going to be rough and everybody's going to be struggling here. But just keeping in mind that you're gonna get to the other side of that hill, and if you can stay mentally positive and minimize the time loss up the hill, you are gonna run a little slower, obviously, up the hills, but and that's okay. But not going to a dark place and trying to keep on a good rhythm up the hills will keep you on track for a good race.
Now, as we publish this episode, we are just a bit over a week from Marathon Monday. So, Coach Lundstrom, what should an athlete be focused on in this final, 8, 9 days from a taper standpoint, from mental preparation standpoint, from a nutrition standpoint? The hay is in the barn from a training standpoint. What can we focus on over this next week?
Yeah, I think, really knowing the course well, studying that profile, if you haven't run it before, knowing where you have those bigger hills and where you have some downhills and things like that. And then from a nutrition standpoint, I mean, I think obviously everybody knows you want to go in well fueled with carbohydrate, but you don't really need to dramatically change your diet in the final week and a half. It's just a matter of making sure that you're timing that carbohydrate intake appropriately. I guess one error that people make often is race morning, they're nervous and they struggle to get in, a good pre-race meal. And, you're probably well topped off with carbohydrates, but that nervous energy you're spending and so on. And while you're sleeping, obviously your brain is using some carbohydrate as well. So you want to make sure you've topped off your stores. But yeah, otherwise I would say, keeping your good regular habits of sleep and nutrition. Don't make any major changes if possible. And yeah, just make sure you're topping off your stores on race morning and the night before.
Yeah, fantastic. Coach Lundstrom, if our listeners want to learn more about Minnesota Distance Elite and support the team, where should we send them?
Yeah, our website is minnesotadistanceelite.com. That's a great place. All of our links to social media are on there. You can donate right at the website, learn more about our athletes, and you're going to hear from Dakota, but we have a bunch of other athletes as well, so you can learn about what everybody's up to. We also have a weekly newsletter that you can subscribe to, should you be so inclined. The link is on the website as well there.
Fantastic. Thank you for joining us. And as I interview Coach Lundstrom now, he is about to take off to Paris to preview the marathon course in Paris. So, Coach Lundstrom, thank you for taking time to talk all things Boston Marathon with us today.
Love to talk about Boston and good to see you, Luke. Thank you.
I am so excited to have the opportunity to be joined by Dakota Lindworm. Dakota's sponsored by Puma and is a member of Minnesota Distance Elite, where she's coached by Chris Lundstrom, who we just heard from. Dakota went to St. Francis High School. She's a graduate of Augustana College and has been on the rise as a professional runner since 2018. She's won two Grandma's Marathons and has a PR of 2:24:40, which she ran at the Chicago Marathon this past October. Most notably, Dakota has secured a spot on the U.S. Paris Olympic team in the marathon by finishing in third place at the Olympic marathon trials in Orlando in February. Welcome, Dakota, and congratulations on your epic race in Orlando.
Yeah, thank you so much. I'm really excited to be on.
I was there watching you live. I had an absolute, I think every Minnesotan did. All of your fan base had a freak out moment the last mile of your race. I was trying to secure a spot to be able to see you come across the last 400 meters, going back and forth between watching you on the app and then being able to see you come by. Pretty sure I stepped on like two very small children that were right along the fence. And I thought they don't need to be there. I need to be closer. It was truly an epic moment. We're not going to spend time recapping your incredible Olympic trials performance. I think you've covered this so thoroughly on so many other podcasts. So I encourage our listeners to search for episodes with Dakota. Here's a few of my favorites. Allie on the Run. Allie did a wonderful interview. Carrie Tollefson, See Tolly Run, did a wonderful interview with Dakota and her significant other, Montana. Really interesting interview, a little different take. And then she joined Lindsay on I'll Have Another. But you can search Dakota Lindworm and you'll see her on all of the podcasts post Olympic trials performance. Today, as I sit down with Dakota, we're a week and a half from the 128th running of the Boston Marathon. It's Monday, April 15th. As an elite marathoner and someone who's experienced on the Boston course, we wanted to have Dakota on to talk about her experience at Boston, hear her advice for maximizing performance on the Boston race course. Now, selfishly, I'm running the Boston Marathon in a week and a half. This is not a coaching call where Dakota is going to help me out. We want to hear from her and hear about her experience and across all of her Bostons. So to clarify for Dakota, she's not running the Boston Marathon. She's in the early stages of a ramp up for the Olympics this August, but she is going to be running the 5K, which is Saturday in Boston and crosses the finish line of the Boston Marathon. She'll be racing the 5K on Saturday. So, Dakota, you've run three Boston marathons. You finished 13th in Boston 2021. You were the third American that year, and that's the Boston Marathon that was held in the fall due to the pandemic. You were in first place for a number of miles in that race. In 2022, you went back to Boston, finished 14th overall, and were the fourth American, and you bested your 2021 time running a 2:29:55. So Dakota, Boston is more than a race. It's tradition. It's about perseverance. It's about triumph. It's a weekend-long celebration of running. So I'm so excited to talk to you about how you approach this weekend celebration, how you approach the race itself. So the first question I have for you, Dakota, is what does the Boston Marathon mean to you? How is it special?
Gosh, you just got me like amped up for it, and I'm not even running the marathon. I'm having a little bit of FOMO just thinking about it. The Boston Marathon, like you said, it's so historic, and it's literally a holiday in Boston. And I don't think running is celebrated in a similar way anywhere. And I think it's just so amazing to go somewhere, and everywhere you look around, people are celebrating. It's kind of like our Super Bowl for all types of runners, whether you're, a charity runner who got in through fundraising or you're an actual BQ athlete. It's like your Super Bowl for sure.
Yeah, I totally agree. So walk us through your Saturday and Sunday pre-marathon Monday. So the marathon is Monday morning. What's your approach to relaxation, mental preparation, time on your feet, social interaction, Saturday and Sunday leading into the marathon?
Yeah, I mean, as a professional runner, I have obligations to, Puma, and as a runner that they bring in, but I have obligations for the BAA as well. So I, of course, have to schedule those in, and I'm happy to. But if I didn't have those obligations, I would be spending as little time as possible on my feet. The caveat of that is Boston's beautiful, and it's going to be hard to not want to walk around. So I think, looking at it from the perspective of somebody who's going out there just to run it and they don't have any obligations, I would say trying to like schedule, here's how many hours I'm okay being on my feet, and saying this is my cutoff. And if I don't get to do all the things that I wanted to, maybe you try to stay a little longer after the race and do those things. But it's beautiful, it's amazing, but don't sacrifice your race by walking around all weekend to see everything that you can. And this is just a tidbit I think of when I'm also a coach, and I try to tell my athletes is start now booking reservations for restaurants. It gets very busy out there, and there's really great restaurants. So if you have anything in mind, if you have anything specific for, Sunday night that you like to fuel with, I would have reservations now.
Yeah, well, those are wise words. So to bring us to race morning, Boston's a late start, 10 a.m. for elites. What does your morning look like, race morning? So what time are you waking up? What does your fueling look like? And where's your head at as you take this long ride to Hopkinton, the start of the race?
Yeah, so Boston is unique. It's similar to New York, where you have a very long bus ride. And so I personally like to get up about an hour to an hour and a half before the bus leaves and, eat my food, kind of get ready for the day. I usually like to, do my makeup or maybe take a quick shower to wake up and drink coffee and make sure the bathroom systems are all ready to go. But then when I get on the bus, I am somebody because you take the bus out and then you have a long time sitting in Hopkinton. I like to have something downloaded on my phone. One year I watched Survivor. I've watched like New Girl on that bus ride, if you have the luxury of bringing your phone out to the start, just because it's too early to be nervous. It's too early to be like amped up. And so just try to relax, whatever that means for you. Maybe it's listening to, some smooth jazz or something. I don't know. But then, once you get out there, that's when you can, put the phone away and start getting into the headspace of, it's ready to race. But whenever the bus leaves, I know it's too early to be ready to race at that time.
Yeah, Dakota, that's an interesting nuance. I love how you worded that. So I've always thought, the bus ride to New York or to Boston, it is too early to be amped up, to not be pumped up. But you added, it's actually too early to even be nervous. So as much as you can disconnect and check out mentally, I mean, you are hours from the start of that race at that point. Okay, so I love that. And then when you're off the bus, you can start to mentally transition to clearly, I'm going to start getting nervous and I can start moving into more of an ideal performance state. Dakota, Boston is a tactically nuanced and challenging race. We just spoke with Coach Lundo about course strategy. So tell us, how do you approach race strategy and tactics in Boston? And how's that approach maybe different than New York City, Grandma's, Twin Cities, Chicago?
Well, let me speak from my experience of mistakes. Absolutely. Like you had mentioned, I led, I think, most of the first two Bostons I ran. And those were really great moments. I got my TV time, but they were mistakes. Don't go out there and run outside of yourself because it's all downhill that first, 13 mile. Well, honestly, like 16 miles. It is obviously rolling, but it is aggressively downhill. And I think it's really easy to be very excited about the crowd support because, like I said, it's like a holiday for them. It literally is a holiday, and people live for this one day. And it's amazing the support you're gonna have, but try to, in the nicest way, tune it out and just run within yourself. It should feel so easy, and it should feel even easier than you expect it. Because if it feels easy and you're running pretty fast, you're probably running outside of yourself in Boston because it is such a downhill course in that beginning. And then another big tip is mile 13 when you're going through the Scream Tunnel of Wellesley. There's nothing like it on this planet. I get goosebumps just thinking about you literally do hear it before you see it. And take a moment, take a breath, step back and say, I'm not going to run. This is not going to be my fastest mile up to this point because it's very easy for that to be. And you want to really save your legs for after you get up heartbreak. After that, if you're still strong, you're going to run a really fast last few miles.
So Dakota, if you're running Chicago, I'm going to guess that you're going to try to even split that course. It's a flat course. It's a fast course. Boston's a little bit different in that the first 6 miles are a screaming downhill. People take off too fast. And then, of course, you get into the Newton Hills, 16 to 21-ish. And then after that, you have a pretty a relatively downhill final 10K. What has your approach been running Boston? Are you trying to evenly split Boston, or are you trying to run based on effort? What has worked for you, and what do you advise your athletes to do?
I would say if you can, Boston is a good course to negative split. because you definitely don't want to front load that first half. As glorious as that sounds, and to say let's stack away some time, that's not the right move. It's better to stack away effort. And if you can negative split it, that's ideal. And that's pretty much with a lot of marathons, but it's a very easy thing to say at Boston and a really hard thing to do. And that's just something I would pound into everybody's head. Do not try to even or positive split that race, saying like, oh, I'll make up all this time in the beginning, because you're gonna hurt extra through Newton, and you don't wanna watch your race slip away as you're climbing Heartbreak, I guess.
I would describe you mid-race as, these are my adjectives, joyful grit. When I think about you running, I think of joyful grit. You're famous for your smile on the race course. But I've also been told by Cody on the MDE board, he says, I mean, this is a direct quote, make no mistake, Dakota's a killer. So joyful grit or joyful and just toughness. Where does this balance of joy and grit come from?
Honestly, I think they go hand in hand. And what I've learned is, when you're out there and you're in a bat and you're got this bad attitude, like, oh, this race hurts, this isn't fun, this wasn't what I was expecting, that's just such a spiral. You're gonna just absolutely kind of just go into this dark, horrible spot. So if you can say, I trained for this, the marathon's gonna be hard no matter if I'm training 40 miles a week or 140 miles a week. It's hard for every single person out there, and expect that. So that's where the joy comes in. It's like, I knew this was going to happen. I knew this was going to hurt. And now I'm going to just be gritty and enjoy what I trained for, I guess. And I've said it before in a million podcasts, but if you smile, you're going to get some random stranger on the side of the road extra excited. You're going to hear weird things like, look at how happy she is, and look at how excited. And when you hear cheers that are so specific to you, I don't think there's any like adrenaline that can match that. Because you're like, wow, they're watching me. And that's not even just for the professional athletes. They're out there. Honestly, the crowd support's probably better for the middle of the pack people out there. And they're out there for every single one of you who are running that race.
So let's hear some of your go-to mantras. What are you replaying in your head as you're maybe starting to really have to display some of the grit?
My one and only mantra that I go back to is, I am strong, I am fast, my speed will last. I like that it's a little bit longer, so you're not saying the same thing over and over, and it's a little bit rhythmatic.
Thank you for sharing that. I've heard you say that on so many podcasts. You should, I think that's basically trademarked by you at this point. To go to Heartbreak Hill, what's your experience and what's your advice? So the three times that you've run Boston, what have each of your heartbreak experiences been?
The first heartbreak, I was super lucky to have my dad out there, and because my heart was breaking on that hill the first time. And he was out there, and I got, a specific cheer from him, and I remember seeing him and being like, okay, I can get out this. The second time, I had run a smarter race, and although it's hard, that make no mistake, I think it's doable. It's just a hill that you have to get up. And the third time, I was hypothermic, so I don't actually have too much memory of that one. But I think you hear a pretty big mixed bag of people who are like, that was the hardest hill I've ever climbed. And then you hear some people who are like, oh, that was heartbreak. And I don't think anybody should walk into that race thinking like, I'm going to get up that hill super easy. Have your expectations set that it is hard. It's hard to go up a hill at that distance in a marathon. But don't let it conquer you before the race starts, and just be ready for it.
Final 10K. So we've crested Heartbreak. We're into that final 10K. You're becoming known for battling in the final 10K. Like when things get tough, when you don't feel good, when you drop from the lead pack like you did at the trials, when any of our listeners look at their watch and they drop a slow mile and start to fall off of goal pace, what's your advice?
I'd say the best advice is to stop looking at the watch in that moment. Don't become so fixated on, oh my gosh, I was 10 seconds too slow. Start working through, go back to your mantra. Start to think about, oh, I did all that hard work. Think about that one workout you did where you were like, I have never worked out so well, and like just channel all that confidence. And then that's really when you should start to really appreciate the crowds of Boston, because that's where you can get carried along because of all the cheers. And that's a great time to start smiling and get their energy. The last 10K of a marathon is going to be hard no matter what, and have that expectation. I think at the end of the day, just have managing the expectation that it's going to be hard no matter what, and just be ready for it.
Right on Hereford, left on Boylston. What's that mean to you? What, when I say those words, the final couple turns and the final straightaway, what emotion does that elicit?
I mean, it's the best two turns in all of marathoning, I think. It's again, just gives me goosebumps. It's going to be so loud that you can't hear anything. It's going to be so emotional. And then, to be fair, a little heartbreaking when you take that left on Boylston, because you're like, this is still a really long way to run. But you're there. You did it. And like, you're taking two of the most historic turns ever. And again, I literally have goosebumps, and I'm like jealous I'm not racing the marathon this year.
Okay, post-race, what does your recovery, nutrition, and the hours after look like? So immediately after, and then even the rest of the day, what's a go-to for you? What are you craving later on in that day?
Yeah, so right after, we typically have to get, taken out to our host hotel, where there might be drug testing. There's usually some sort of like medical. I'm just trying to get any and every type of calorie in. I for some reason typically crave a Coke, so that's usually my first thing I grab. Just trying to get something in. Sometimes you have like some tempo tummy from the marathon, and that's normal, but just still trying to get a little bit of food in. And then I'll shower, maybe sit for a little bit, but after the race is like such a celebration in Boston. I'm usually trying to get right out of my hotel. And like I said before, that's the time that you can go see the city and not feel like you're taking away from your race. So if you've got the energy, that's when you should get out. I really love legal seafood out there, so I typically have a reservation for that. I'm a big oyster girl, so I usually try to get out to one of those restaurants.
Love it. Love it. Okay. Dakota, have you seen the movie Spirit of the Marathon?
I have not.
Okay. It's got to be on your list. It's on Amazon. This is a documentary that followed the 2005 Chicago Marathon. And they follow a number of different runners, one of which is Dina Castor. And the movie's amazing. I watch it before every marathon that I run. It came out in 2006. It opened up in select theaters around the country. You know, the theater was so fun because it was just filled with runners. I mean, they were just hanging on every word of this movie. Really well done. Well, the movie starts with a powerful quote from Dina Castor. She's running, and there's a voiceover with her speaking. And, you know, she goes on to win the 2005 Chicago Marathon. It was her first major win. And her quote is, "Sometimes the moments that challenge us the most define us." So can you share with us a few of the moments that have challenged you and how have they defined you?
Oh, that almost gets me emotional. I have two very specific things that come to mind. The first is my first marathon as a post-collegiate. I was running CIM, and I stepped off the course after throwing up and just not having the day I wanted at, I don't know, mile 18 or 19. And as much as I wanted to say, like, this isn't for me, I'm not a marathoner, I'm never gonna make it as a pro. I think that really hard moment I turned into, this is never going to happen again, and I'm going to come and do this again and be stronger. And then another very defining moment is when I watched what I thought was the Olympic team run away from me at the trials, and just, having Lundo's voice in my head saying, like, you never know what's going to happen in that last 10K. There's no reason to give up. And just, staying gritty and deciding that the race wasn't over at that time and that I could catch them again.
I love that. Thank you for sharing that with us. Can you leave us with your kind of final pep talk for everyone listening who's running the Boston Marathon, who wants to run their best Boston Marathon? Words of wisdom from Dakota.
Yeah, I mean, you're taking part of something that is so incredibly magical in the world of marathoning. Whatever you did to get to Boston is so incredible, and go in and just enjoy it, because if you're not having fun, if you're not enjoying it, you're not going to run your best. So just go there, no pressure, and have fun.
Love it. Dakota, you deserve all of your success. You're a wonderful model of grit and grind and focus and faith. So good luck at the 5K in Boston coming up in a week and a half. I'll be there cheering for you. Good luck in Paris. I'll also be there cheering for you. And I think you're going to have a lot of Minnesotans and so many people across the US becoming the biggest Dakota Lindbergh fans. Thank you so much for spending this time with us today.
Yeah, thanks so much for having me.
Appreciate it. Dakota, thank you for doing this.
Of course.
Congratulations on all of your success. You're so fun to root for. If I can do anything for you, I'm just going to constantly be in Chris's ear to just whatever I can do to help you. But if there's ever a roadblock, if there's something that's needed at some point, Chris and Cody know, and I want you to know that I'm here to do anything that I can to support you. So thank you for coming on today.
Yeah, of course. Thank you so much.
Yeah, have a great day.
Yeah, you too. Bye-bye.
Okay, finally, let's talk about strength training for long distance runners. The reason, the why behind strength training for marathon performance, for long distance running of any kind, really twofold. Number one, the first focus of the strength training program is we want to prevent injury. If we can prevent injury, if we can mitigate injury risk or injury severity over the course of a marathon buildup, a runner is able to stick to their marathon training plan. And if you can stick to that plan, that's where most of the performance enhancement comes from. So our first focus is injury prevention. The second performance, excuse me, the second benefit is performance enhancement. We see this largely via improved running economy. Running economy means your ability to run at a given pace, a given speed, while utilizing less oxygen. We become more efficient. We're able to run at the same pace and we utilize less oxygen. And we have so much scientific research that says strength training enhances running economy. Those are the two primary whys that drive our strength training for long distance runners. Now, strength training for long distance runners has gone through a massive evolution over the last 20 years. 20 years ago, long distance runners and their coaches largely rejected the idea of strength training. And today, we see it largely adopted. We're still making some mistakes in how we actually apply it. So, what I want to go through now is just some of the best practices of what we should be doing when we strength train for a long distance runner. First, let's talk about frequency. We would aim for 1 to 2 strength training workouts per week. I would say, as a guideline, start with 2. Depending on the runner and depending how much running they're doing, we can actually decrease this to 1 strength training workout a week, or even thinking about 1 strength training workout every 5 to 6 days. If you're a high mileage runner, we just heard from Coach Lundstrom when he was running at his peak, he was running 150 miles in a week, and strength training twice per week, he might not be able to actually recover from that much strength training. So we generally had him strength train just 1 time per week. So let's start off with 2 times a week as volume really increases. If you're a high mileage long distance runner, you might want to think about 1 time per week. Next is our focus should be a total body workout. We actually want to strength train our legs, of course, and our upper body. We're going to train our midsection, our abs, our low back as well. But we actually shouldn't place an emphasis over the midsection or on the midsection over other muscle groups, over our legs or our upper body. And so many distance runners do that. I mean, you can't listen to a long distance running podcast or relay article that doesn't say you got to focus on core training. And the research is pretty clear on this as well. Having a stronger core or engaging in core training does not improve long distance running performance. Now, we should still do it. We just shouldn't emphasize it over training our legs or our upper body. Next is the type of equipment we're using or the type of external resistance. And the reality is, a long distance runner can use machines, they can use free weights, or they can use body weight. I think the mistake that's most common here is long distance runners and their coaches say things like, well, we're just training for distance running. And if you want to do that, something as simple as body weight exercises is actually better And that's just not the case. Bodyweight exercises can definitely suffice, but it's not better. A bodyweight exercise is not better than using a free weight or using a machine for a long distance runner. So we would say be agnostic about the type of equipment. It could be machines, it could be free weights, it could be bodyweight, it could be bands, it could be manual resistance, it could be a balance of all of these. Now, the myth that persisted for so many years with long distance running is in order to improve your muscle endurance, you have to use light weights and do a lot of repetitions. And that's just not the case. The research is very clear that our muscle endurance improves in a linear manner with our muscle strength. So we could use a light weight, we could use a moderate weight, or we could use a heavy weight. Now, interestingly, over the last 20 years, we've seen a shift in long distance running, running training, where long distance runners are now using very, very heavy weights. And I think the reality is, again, we don't have to use heavy weights. We don't have to use light weights. We can use a light, moderate, or heavy weight, and we can use a variety of different repetition ranges. I think a great starting point is about 8 to 12 repetitions, but there's nothing wrong with using 20 reps. There's nothing wrong with using a heavy weight for 6 reps. The notion that if a long distance runner uses very heavy weight for a few repetitions, that they're going to somehow bulk up or be focused more on strength is the prevailing myth that just will not die. So we have autonomy in how much weight and how many repetitions we should actually do. Now, our next point is a little bit more nuanced. If we're preparing for a marathon like the Boston Marathon that has a significant downhill component to it, we're wise to focus on some eccentric muscle work in our strength training workouts. So eccentric just means how we lower the weight. Concentric is lifting the weight, eccentric is lowering the weight. Well, when we run downhill, we're doing repetitive eccentric muscle contractions, and those are really, really costly on our physiology. So when you think about the Boston Marathon, the first half is largely downhill, and people feel that they pay for those downhill miles later on in the marathon course. So how do we prepare for that in our strength training workouts? Just focus on eccentric work. So if you're doing a leg press, lift it for 2 seconds, lower it for 10 seconds. You can do the same with a leg extension, for example, to prepare the quadriceps. You could reach the point of muscle failure and you could have your personal trainer, your training partner, lift the weight for you, meaning they're doing the concentric and you're just controlling the eccentric. So we want to focus on as much eccentric work as we can to prepare for the downhill portions of the actual race. Now, next, where should we place the strength training workout in our week of running and our week of training? I think we're wise to place the strength training workout as close in proximity as possible to another key run that we're doing, a hard effort, while it should also be after that hard effort. So if you're going to do a challenging tempo run that day, try to place the strength training workout in the same day and do it soon after. And it doesn't have to be 10 minutes after, but try to place it in the same day. So you might go out for a really tough tempo run that morning or speed session that morning, what we would call a quality run, a quality workout that morning. Schedule your strength training workout later that afternoon or evening for 5 p.m. You do that all in one day. And then the next day or the next couple of days, you're actually recovering from both of those stimulus. What we don't want to do, or both of those stimuli, what we don't want to do is we don't want to do a tough strength training workout and lead that into a demanding run. We want to go into the run as fresh as possible. And we actually rather go into the strength training workout where we're not fresh. We should be fatigued from the run that we just did. That's okay. And we could even apply this to the long run. We could do a 20-mile run in the morning, finish up that run Saturday morning, you do your long run, and you get some good nutrition afterwards, and you shower, and you have a little bit of rest. And then maybe 4 hours later, you schedule your strength training workout, and you're not going to want to do the strength training workout 4 hours later. You're not going to feel great, but that's a really great scheduling of those two stimuli. And I think your recovery will be that much better going into the couple days following those two big efforts. So just think about key run and then follow it with the strength training workout right after that key run. And then lastly, leading into the marathon, we want to think about how the strength training workout fits with our marathon taper. We should strength train consistently 1 to 2 times a week through an entire marathon buildup. It doesn't have to be a marathon. It could be preparing for a half marathon or whatever your key race is. And then 10 to 14 days before the big race, we want to discontinue strength training for the legs completely. You can still do an upper body workout. You can still work your midsection. We want our last leg strength training workout to be 10 to 14 days ahead of time. And we can still push pretty hard in that workout. It can still be an intense workout. And then those 10 to 14 days will allow a couple things to happen. One, it's not long enough where we lose any of the benefit, the physiological benefit from the strength training workout. But two, it's a long enough period where we are totally recovered going into that key race, going into that marathon or half marathon. So a 10 to 14 taper is 10 to 14 day strength training taper is key. And then lastly, when do we return to strength training? Well, we would always recommend have your next strength training workout be in close proximity to the key race. And now, why is that? It's because it'll actually expedite recovery following the strength training, excuse me, following the marathon or the half marathon. So you run the Boston Marathon on Monday, try to get your strength training workout in as soon as Wednesday. Now, are you going to want to strength train on Wednesday? No, you're not going to feel good. But the increase in blood flow and that movement actually expedites recovery. You're going to feel that much better on Thursday, Friday, and Saturday. Now that workout might be scaled back a little bit in terms of the overall intensity and even how much weight you can handle or how many repetitions you're able to perform with a given weight, but try to get that strength training workout in fairly close proximity to the marathon that you run. With that, everyone running the Boston Marathon here in just over a week, good luck. Thank you for joining us in the Discover Strength podcast.